Going to the gym can be discouraging, especially if you're putting in the work but barely seeing changes. But with Tonal, you can actually see your progress with every workout. Tonal provides the convenience of a full gym and the expertise of a personal trainer anytime at home with one sleek system. Designed to reduce your mental load, Tonal is the ultimate strength training system, helping you focus less on workout planning and more on getting results. No more second-guessing your technique. Tonal gives you real-time coaching cues to dial in your form and help you lift safely and effectively. After a quick assessment, Tonal sets the optimal weight for every move and adjusts in 1 pound increments as you get stronger, so you're always challenged. Tonal lets you choose from a variety of expert-led workouts, from strength to arrow hit to yoga and mobility to keep you coming back for more. For a limited time, go to Tonal.com to get $500 off your Tonal purchase, plus a free 4-year warranty. That's Tonal.com for $500 off, plus a free 4-year warranty. Tonal.com.
Can you believe it? It's football. I've been watching it for 40 years.
Are you kidding me?
You're listening to Winning Cures Everything.
Game day, baby. Wake up or get out.
Here's your host.
A confident young man. A superb athlete.
Gary Seegers.
Welcome in, Winning Cures Everything. It is a college football podcast. I'm your host, Gary Seegers. And oh yes, it has been a minute. But just a short minute. No, I take that back. It's been a very long time since I've done one of these, but I am looking forward to getting back on the ball and doing the Drive Time show. Things have changed in the personal journey. So if you have been here before, first off, thanks for coming back. If you haven't been here before, things didn't used to be like this. I didn't used to drive around all the time and do college football shows, but I enjoy talking about college football. I love the storylines. I love talking about the betting aspect of it, but I have changed things up. News off the top. I will not be doing the BetUS TV college football show this fall. Made some personal decisions, and I will not be doing that this year. Winning Cures Everything is going to change just a little bit. I'm not going to be as focused on this year. I did multiple shows, multiple interviews every week last year. I'm not going to be doing that. I have a new job. So it's I'm an IT systems administrator. So I'm going to be focusing on the job, focusing on my relationships, my children, and, you know, working on me. And I have lost 25 pounds in the past couple of months, and I'm continuing on that journey. So got to take better care of myself, all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, things are changing a little bit, but my passion for the sport of college football has not changed, and I don't believe will ever change. I still love the sport, even as crazy as things have been, and as much as they are continuing to change. But, hey, if college football is going to change a whole lot, I figured why not me? why don't I change along with it? So we got a lot to discuss today. I haven't been here in a while, but there's been some pretty big news going on behind the scenes that we're going to talk about today. And it's May, it's the off season, it's time to start discussing previews. So we'll be getting to those. But today we're going to talk about some news and whatnot, and I'll give my opinion on some of these things just so that, you know, if you weren't keeping up, if you haven't been paying attention, then you'll know some of these, and now you're going to know my opinion on these. So let's go on and start off with this. The House settlement should have been done by now. All the talk was that it was going to be done in April, right? The NCAA and the Power Four, which I think it's a Power Two and then two more, but that's the SEC and the Big Ten, along with the ACC and the Big 12. They're trying to dodge basically a legal pile driver, right? They're revising one of the most hated parts of the House settlement, and that is roster limit. Right now, the judge in this case has said that schools can grandfather in current roster athletes, players that they cut earlier this year, incoming high school recruits who committed before their spot got nuked, like all this kind of stuff. But they said that it's optional. Like, schools don't have to keep these players. So if they want a clean house, nothing is necessarily stopping them. The quote was, these protected athletes would presumably roll off the exception list as their eligibility expires. And this is being pitched as a compromise to federal, as a compromise to federal judge Claudia Wilkin. She told the NCAA to phase in roster limits to avoid mass player cut. But by making it optional, that's kind of a legal shrug, not a solution, I think. And if a school doesn't want to keep a guy that he can transfer, he'll still be exempt from the roster caps at his new school, and that part could get kind of wild, I think. So, as it sits, I mean, the judge kind of holds the whistle and the clock is running on this. Judge Wilkin, you know, in this billion-dollar settlement, she is not playing. Like, she's already called the settlement good, but she didn't like the roster cuts, and she told the NCAA to go fix it. Gave them 2 weeks to make this right. The NCAA and the conferences came back with the optional model, and there are attorneys that are objecting to this. Laura Rutherford and Steve Molo. They're basically saying that that's not good enough. They're wanting to take care of, you know, these athletes that could get cut by this. And to be fair, the roster cuts thing was absurd from the beginning. Like, we're talking about cutting walk-on. I don't know why you would have to, like, you don't have to revenue share with every single athlete. So I'm not certain what the issue is here. But the attorney said she required the NCAA and power leagues to negotiate with the objectors through a mediator. You know, Wilkin has until May 13th to hear the objectors. The NCAA gets a rebuttal window until May 16th. And then the judge can rule any time after that. Now, if she approves it, athletes start getting direct income, direct revenue share on July 1st. And the NCAA avoids, you know, an absolute decade of litigation. And if she denies it, then really the chaos is only going to get worse. I mean, if she denies it, like, this thing is... The NCAA will lose this case if it goes to trial, and it will be much more expensive than what they have agreed to. This settlement is just a pinprick of what the damage could be if they don't get this thing settled. So, this is the future of college sports that's hanging in the balance. I mean, that's how big the House settlement is. It's $2.8 billion in back pay that's tied to this. It could be significantly more. It could be double this if they don't get this settlement done. So it's incredibly important that they agree. Now, why the NCAA and the member schools would not just agree to, okay, we will grandfather in the players that are currently on roster. I don't feel like that's that hard. But to each their own, schools are going to start paying up to $20 million per year in shared revenue with the athletes. If Wilkin denies it, you still have schools in states like Texas, California, and several others that are going to start paying players anyway thanks to their state laws. So, I mean, there's nothing the NCAA can do about it if these schools want to start paying players regardless of the House settlement. So it's going to happen one way or the other. The Revenue Sharing Clearinghouse and the new enforcement entity, they're already ready to go. Cap management, NIL deal reviews, like the whole deal. You know, I'm looking at it this way. Like, is the NCAA bluffing with this? Like, I don't know why they would be. Like, I don't understand why they're not so... Optional is not mandatory. And I understand that they want things to be an option. But, like, why you wouldn't agree to this immediately makes no sense to me. Like, their PR department does the absolute worst job. They pick the worst stuff to focus on. We're talking about walk-ons. Work with the walk-ons. Keep the walk-ons. Like, what are we doing? If it's optional, schools can still trim the fat. And, yeah, like, there's still going to be players that kind of get pushed at, hey, if you want to play, you're probably not going to play here. You might want to transfer. They've all been doing that. Like, very rarely do schools actually cut players. Like, they kind of force them out. If they don't come back and agree to this and Wilkin says no, I mean, this is a doomsday scenario. Like, states go rogue, NCAA loses all control, courts get flooded again, the NCAA is going to lose a bunch of different cases. It is going to be an absolute nightmare. And all of this stuff happening leads you back to the forever question of, is this the moment that college sports finally breaks away from the NCAA? Like, is this the time? Is this what ends up happening? So, if schools can pay players already through state laws, do all of these schools need the NCAA? And maybe not. Maybe not. So, I know we're going to talk in a little bit about something that's happening in our legislative system that could end up with the Super League, but we'll hit that up in a little bit. But this is what we're headed to. Some schools are going to be in for it, some are not, and if they get the house thing done, then all of them have to be, and cheers to it. Cheers to it. The house settlement stuff is boring in one sense. In the other sense, it is the most important thing that has happened in college athletics maybe ever, because it completely changes the way that the sport is run, more so than anything that has happened in the past. So, I'm excited about it. We'll see what ends up happening. But I would imagine, you know, by May 16th, May 17th, something like that, we should have a ruling. I think it's going to get done. I cannot imagine the NCAA is that stupid. I can't imagine the member schools are that dumb that they would let something like keeping walk-ons restrict this thing, because they have to know that they're going to lose if they go to trial. But we'll see. We'll see. Topic number two. Let's talk about the SEC and ESPN and a 9-game conference schedule. We've been talking about this for years. Even before they added Texas and Oklahoma, when the Big Ten went to 9 games, when the Big 12 went to 9 games, everybody wondered when the SEC was going to do it. When are we getting 9 games out of the SEC? And there has been no point for the SEC to do that. Even last year, the SEC schedules were incredibly difficult, and they ended up only getting 3 schools in the college football playoff, in the 12-team college football, or 3 schools or 4, Texas, Georgia, Tennessee. Am I missing somebody? I guess that might have been it. Either way. Should have been more prepared for that one, right? So, we've been talking about this for a long time, but there had to be some other things go on. And people talked about for the longest time about the CFP format, etc. I have always told you on this show that the SEC would not move to 9 conference games unless ESPN agreed to pay them more money. It wouldn't happen unless the NCAA agreed. Or not the NCAA, ESPN. Unless ESPN gave them more money, they were not going to change their scheduling format, because it allowed more flexibility for non-conference options. 1 FCS school, 2 G5 schools, 1 Power 5 school, and then you got 8 conference games. Well, in COVID, the COVID season of 2020, they went to, was it 10 conference games? I think that's right. And it was interesting. And there were a lot of good matchups. And people wanted more of this. But then as soon as they got out of that, they went back to an 8-game conference schedule. ESPN is now reportedly, per The Athletic, offering a financial incentive. I think that's the easiest way to put it. They're offering a financial incentive to the SEC for them to move to a 9-game schedule. Now, what this does is it adds an extra loss to half of the conference. So, obviously, that changes things. They're looking at an extra $50 to $80 million per year at the SEC if the conference finally moves to that 9-game schedule. As it stands right now, ESPN, they are already cutting a fat check, right? $811 million per year to broadcast SEC games. But The Athletic reports ESPN is open to adding more cash to that deal, $50 to $80 million, if the SEC gives fans one more conference matchup. It's not a formal offer yet, but behind the scenes, people are hinting that it is a serious deal. Nick Bromberg at Yahoo said that the additional money, you know, $50 to $80 million annually, if it's $80 million annually, each of the 16 schools are going to get, is that $4 million or is that just an additional $2 million? No, that would be $5 million. 80 minus 16, Anyway, regardless, rather than paying a non-conference opponent to come in and, you know, and it's not a guarantee that you beat some of these bye games, right? Mississippi State lost to Toledo at home last year, so it's not, it ain't a guarantee that even if you pay somebody to come into your stadium to play you, that you're going to win the game. It's not a guarantee. But if you play another SEC game, that's more likely a loss for schools like Vanderbilt, maybe not last year, Kentucky, Mississippi State, etc., right? But it also could mean more Georgia versus LSU, Alabama versus Florida, Texas versus Tennessee. Things that could be absolute monster matchups. And that's what ESPN wants more of. So it's more viewership, more money. Ratings absolutely boomed in 2024 in the first year of the exclusive deal with ESPN and ABC. So let's talk about the risk and the reward. You know, the 12-team playoff didn't go exactly the way that the SEC wanted last year. We're not going to rehash that. But Alabama, Ole Miss, and South Carolina all had a claim to a spot last year. And it appeared that strength of schedule played absolutely zero part in that. Now, I would imagine going into 2026, that is going to change. But a lot is also going to change with that playoff format. So, you know, we'll talk about that in just a bit. Greg Sankey has said publicly that he is in favor of a 9-game slate, but not if it causes the SEC to lose opportunities, which is what that was last year. Alabama, Ole Miss, and South Carolina were all 9-3 last year, and the losses were in conference to opponents. You know, road games, Alabama loses at Oklahoma. Oklahoma was not great, but they, you look at the amount of NFL talent that's on the Oklahoma roster, and yeah, they can sneak up and get anybody. Ole Miss lost to Kentucky at home. They lost at Florida. You know, those things happen. Like, in a conference like this, where every school has really, really good players, even if they're not good consistently, they can be good on a Saturday, and that's the issue, is you are playing against the best of the best, right? Nick Bromberg did right. He said, is a 9-3 team with a home win over Akron really better than an 8-4 team with a road loss at Georgia? That's what we're looking at here. So the issue is that so many people look, with the NFL, it's just you are what your record says you are. And that's not exactly true, but when it comes to playoff standings, yes, that absolutely makes sense. But we have to start looking at the CFP more like the NCAA tournament. With college basketball, they have really focused in college basketball on your strength of schedule. What are your good wins, etc., right? If you don't do that in college football, then you have a big problem, because there are schools every year that end up with really good records that have absolutely no meat on that bone. Like, none. So, you saw Boise State last year. Played hardly anybody. Indiana played hardly anybody that was worth a crap. And Indiana was a really good school, really good football team last year. But the only good teams, great teams that they played last year, both ended up in the national championship game. Both of those games were not competitive. Like, they got absolutely demolished by Ohio State. They got absolutely demolished by Notre Dame. So you don't really know exactly what these teams are. You just know that they have a good record. And we're looking for something better than that, because the CFP is looking for good matchups. That's the biggest thing. They are looking for good matchups. So, you know, we'll see. We'll see what ends up there. There is a wild card in all of this, right? There are rumblings of a potential scheduling agreement between the SEC and the Big Ten. Big Ten already plays 9 conference games. If both leagues agree to an annual non-conference showdown, then that could eat up a non-conference slot for the SEC teams. It would make going to a 9 league games even tougher to manage. So the TV rights can get kind of messy, right? ESPN owns the SEC home games, even against Big Ten foes. Fox, CBS, and NBC, they control the Big Ten home games. That means half the matchups could fall outside of ESPN's reach unless they sweeten the pot even more. So there is a chance. There was talk for a little while about the SEC and the Big Ten doing a scheduling agreement and doing them at neutral site games so that they could sell the TV package. So basically sell that separately from these home games. Who knows? A few different angles I could take on. I am still not totally convinced that the SEC should take the money and add the game, right? For teams like South Carolina and Arkansas and the ones that I listed before, does that make extra sense for them, right? South Carolina was really good last year, but they're not good every year. Like, South Carolina is a team that cycles. Arkansas is a team that cycles. Arkansas won 9 games a couple of years ago. Last year, made a bowl game, but yeah, there are certainly things that can be worked on. They did not make a bowl game the year before that. The second part is Sankey may be playing, you know, 4D chess here. His public support for 9 games sounds nice, but there's always caveats, right? And with him, there's certainly some big caveats. I think it's a leverage play. I think he wants more money out of ESPN. I think that you tell him, 50 to 80 sounds nice. I don't think we're budging until we get to 100. So if ESPN comes back with an extra $100 million for 9 conference games, all right, now we'll talk. Now we'll sit down at the table. That's my thought process behind it. And then, of course, the other thought is about this SEC Big Ten alliance. Would that ruin the 9-game plan? The Big Ten has 18 schools, and those the whole of that conference is not as strong in a football sense as the SEC is. So the schedules in the Big Ten are never going to be the difficulty. Yeah, I think that makes sense. That the SEC schedule is. It's just not. So now there is something to pay attention to. Scheduling is cyclical. If you go back and look at last year, the schools that ended up making it to the playoff were the schools in the Big Ten and the SEC that had the easiest schedules, for the most part, right? Georgia had the most difficult schedule in the country. Ohio State had a pretty difficult schedule. But you go and look at Oregon, Penn State, Texas, Tennessee, those had easy conference schedule, and they were able to use that to get to the playoff. And so, this might be ESPN and Fox playing like a tug of war here, because I think they both would want Big Ten and SEC games. So we'll see what ends up happening with this. How realistic is a 9-game conference schedule for the SEC? I think it's fairly realistic, so long as somebody opens up the pocketbook. That's the truth. All right, let's hit on topic number 3. I still got a little bit of time, and then we're going to record the rest of this podcast in a little while. But let's talk about politics, because why the hell not? Donald Trump, Nick Saban, and the future of college sports. Now, is this a power play, or is this just political theater? Trump and Saban have teamed up. This is a new commission, a presidential commission, that is being put together. And according to Ross Dellinger at Yahoo Sports, Trump is preparing to launch this commission on college sports, and Nick Saban is going to lead it. Alongside him is Texas oil tycoon and Texas Tech donor Cody Campbell. Quote on this says, Trump and Saban met last week during Trump's graduation speech to visit to Alabama. And the meeting turned into this commission idea. So The commission is, it's going to dive into a lot of different things. NIL, it's going to meet on transfer portal chaos, revenue sharing, conference realignment. There has been talk about litigation on this for ever. Like, not litigation, excuse me, congressional oversight, I think is the right word. And nobody's ever been able to get anything done. So they, I mean, it's a stacked agenda. They're trying to figure out all these different things, right? The House settlement is certainly going to fix some of this. But let's get around this guy so that I can get to where I need to go. So there are things that are broken inside of college athletics that need to be fixed. It's in a weird spot. It's like a no man's land kind of thing. And I don't know exactly how they go about fixing this. It says, let's call it like it is. College sports right now is in a weird spot between the illusion of amateurism and full-blown pro contracts. So I wrote down here, NIL changed the game in 2021 after state legislators forced the NCAA's hand. California started that whole thing. But along with that, you've got the House settlement that's coming. You've got, final approval that needs done on that. But even still, there's a lot going on there. I think that's the easiest way to put it. There is a lot going on with the House settlement and all the things that will change around the sport revolving around that. Billions of dollars in TV money is suddenly subject to legal scrutiny, I think is the best way to put that. And it's a political play. Anytime there's big money involved, everybody kind of wants to get their hands on it. It is what it is. So I told you about senators and Congress and everybody that has tried to do something about this for a long, long time. Because if you're going to have rules in college athletic, there has to be some kind of congressional oversight. Some might call it overreach. But you have to be able to stamp out stuff because otherwise it will turn into just a pro entity. And there's only so much that you can do. If you are wanting rosters to go back to somewhat normal, where you can't transfer all the time, like how wild is it that a college football player on a team can decide that he wants to leave one school in December, go somewhere else, and then choose to leave that school in April before the football season? Now, I understand regular students can transfer whenever they want to. They can go to whatever school they want to whenever. I get that. However, when you are part of a football team, that should be different. Like, I think it's just, that is simple. Very simple. The five senators, Cruz, Moran, Booker, Coons, and Blumenthal, they've been trying for months to craft federal legislation on this. They are closer than ever, but Congress is gridlocked. And that makes sense because they get gridlocked on everything. That's just the way that it goes. Over a dozen college-related bills have been introduced in recent years. None have reached the Senate floor for a vote. Trump, it's reported that he might just bypass all of that. He might just look at this and go with an executive order, which is similar to what he did for, I think it was a Religious Liberty Commission, something like that. You know, there's a world where, you know, college leaders believe that federal legislation is still needed, even if the House settlement is approved, just so that they can enforce the new system. Because there are things about the House settlement that, if they get brought back to court, are probably going to lose. So, Trump has he's hinted at this before. This is the first move that feels like a concrete kind of thing. I'm interested in this. One, you know, is Saban, is he the guy for this? Like, I'm curious about that. Like, is Trump did Trump get the right guy? Because Nick Saban is 73 years old. He's been at this for a while. And I don't know that he necessarily, I don't know what the word would be here. He's just older, right? I think that's the easiest way to put that. He's an older guy, and you know, some people think that maybe he's looking at things from a past view, not a modern view. And Nick Saban is not a lawyer. So, like, is he really going to give you something that – and if it gets passed by an executive order, well, then, okay. Like, that is what it is. So.
What makes for a great vacation? Depends on who you ask. Are you looking to get away or bring everyone together? Do you want to get outside and play or see a play at the plate? Fortunately, however you operate, I'm the destination you've been looking for. The name's Missouri, but you can call me Mo. And I have just one question. What's your MO? Come see me at visitmo.com.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365, because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply.
I don't know. I'm curious about Cody Campbell. We'll talk more about this once I get back in the car. But this is wild. I don't know. It feels like a power grab by the old guard to kind of put toothpaste back in the tube. That's what it feels like to me anyway. All right, so we're splicing back together. Let's jump back into the presidential commission that Donald Trump is putting together with Nick Saban at the front. And what I wanted to hit on was Cody Campbell. Right, the Texas oil billionaire that is a booster and an NIL supporter of Texas Tech football, etc. We talked about Nick Saban being the potential right guy to lead this. Is it potentially a power grab by the old guard to put the toothpaste back in the tube? I don't know that you can technically do that. We talked about Nick Saban not being a lawyer, not being somebody that understands the legal aspect of this. But if this is something that is put in by the president as an executive order, and it's something that's done federally, that wouldn't necessarily matter. So with this, you could be able to set some ground rules that maybe wouldn't be legal in other aspects, but could be in this instance, right? And this would keep student-athletes from necessarily being employees, right? So Cody Campbell, let's talk about that side of it. There's been several different articles that have talked about him wanting to find a way to include FBS football in the Sports Act of 1961, which is basically the law that allows an antitrust exemption for Major League Baseball and the NBA and the NFL, etc. And what that would do is allow the FBS to take all 136 of their teams and put it under one roof, and they could take, which is exactly what the NCAA did back in the day before the Supreme Court ruling in 84, I believe it was, with Georgia and Oklahoma, where they won their TV rights. The NCAA should have settled because the attorney in that case begged the NCAA to settle because he knew that this was going to eventually ruin college athletics. Anyway. So, with revenue sharing coming, etc., Cody Campbell wants all FBS to be under the same TV contract. And then it just becomes a matter of, like, that way everybody's making the same TV money, but the schools that have more are going to get more. They're going to spend more, etc., right? So you can get more from ticket sales and from all of the other stuff. I don't think that's likely. I think what that would do, actually, is, I mean, this is the one thing that would allow the Super League to happen, right? This antitrust exemption would allow 30 to 40 schools to join together and leave their conferences and leave the NCAA, and it would avoid litigation from these, from the other schools, etc., because the other schools will diminish in value when it comes to football, etc., when this happens, and I think it's going to happen. But he wants everything to be all together, all combined. And I just don't see a world where that happens. Maybe you take the Power Four conferences and you get all of those under. What I'm surprised about is the fact that, and what this might be, is Cody thinking that by him being involved and discussing the Super League, that Texas Tech will be included in the Super League. I don't know that that was a guarantee beforehand. I don't know that it's a guarantee right now, but I think it's much more of a possibility if he is at the front of the table having the discussions about it. So maybe that's why he's being involved with this. I was a little surprised to see two people that are on complete opposite sides. And Cody Campbell, to be fair, does not want students to be able to transfer like this. That are, well, football players to be able to transfer like this and whatnot. He's taking advantage of the system because he is basically footing the bill for Texas Tech's insane roster overhaul this year. And it's at his disposal, so he can do it. And the rules are that he can do it. But that doesn't necessarily mean that he likes it. And I understand where he's coming from and why that seems so strange. Nick Saban hates it. Nick Saban absolutely hates it. So with Trump being involved in this, it could politicize this even more. It potentially this is about narrative control as opposed to actual change. But to me, this is setting the stage for the NCAA to be replaced by something else, whatever that might be. That's my opinion on this. I think this is just setting it to where the NCAA will no longer be needed because they don't have any teeth. They cannot enforce the rules that they set until something gets done at a federal level. And if something were to happen at a federal level, they may decide that it's not the NCAA. They may decide that it's something completely different. The NCAA would still be over FCS and Division II, Division III, but not over the biggest levels of the sport, because football, no pun intended, trumps everything. Like, basketball does have some value. Even women's basketball, in some instances, has some value. Even college baseball has some value in certain spots. Football is king when it comes to college athletics. So, I'm curious what it's going to end up looking like. So, we'll see on that. Topic number four here. We haven't gotten to talk about this. Other people have discussed it. Sharon Moore, Michigan football coach, is suspended for 2 games. And this was a self-imposed penalty by the University of Michigan. And they did not do just the first 2 games of the season like you would think. Sharon Moore, of course, has a history with Oklahoma. They want him to be able to coach in that game in Norman in the second game of the season, so they are suspending him for the third and fourth games of the year. And it, again, this is self-imposed. This is not by the NCAA. So he is going to miss weeks 3 and 4 due to the fallout of the Connor Stallions sign-stealing scandal, that situation. This thing could go on forever. And the fact that the school self-imposed anything, to me, was a bit of a surprise because they continue to say that they did nothing wrong. If there was more to the text messages that Sharon Moore deleted to and from Connor Stallions, because he deleted the whole conversation, they were able to get the whole thing back because there is still a history in your iCloud of your messages and da-da-da-da-da. So they were able to get the whole thing. And apparently there wasn't really anything there. The games that he is suspended for are Central Michigan, which is hilarious. I personally think that Michigan should bring back Connor Stallions to coach in that game because that's funny. I mean, that would just be funny. Let's be honest. I mean, all the talk about Connor Stallions being on the sideline of, like, on Central Michigan's sideline against Michigan State and, like, wearing the sunglasses at night that can record, that's funny. And then week 4 at Nebraska. That's a conference game. They are skipping weeks 1 and 2 of the season. Now, what's different about this as opposed to what Jim Harbaugh did was Harbaugh was able to stay with the team during the week, and then they just had Sharon Moore execute the game plan on game day. In this situation, he's going to be out those entire weeks. He will have nothing to do with the game plan. He will have. And now, my guess is, in the offseason, they're going to prep as much as they can for this. And in the weeks where they're getting ready for other games, like heading up to week one, heading into week two, they're going to do a little bit of prep for the other games as well. So can you fit 3 weeks of prep into the Oklahoma week? Yeah, we'll see. We'll see what they can do. But yeah, this is it. There's a June hearing on the docket. I'm interested because if the NCAA does hand down some kind of punishment, it's going to get appealed, and who knows where the NCAA is by that point. It's going to be interesting. Let's zoom out of this. This program won a national title 2 years ago, perfect 15-0 record. The head coach got suspended. Is now suspended for 2 games. The former coach is in the NFL. You got the stain of scandal that still has not washed out of this. Connor Stallions is now coaching high school ball in Michigan. Michigan finished number 25 in Yahoo Sports way too early, top 25 this year. But this is just another distraction for a program that rarely ever got in trouble. I mean, they just, for the longest time, they quote-unquote played the right way and didn't, they steered clear of rule breaking. They didn't recruit at the highest level, all that kind of, and they still don't recruit at the highest level, but they are more than willing to spend NIL money to get transfers. And this year, you know, they're bringing in Bryce Underwood. They've got Mikey Keene as kind of a stopgap, but Bryce Underwood is the dude. They're paying this guy $12 million. He's a true freshman coming in, but they say that this guy is the closest thing to Cam Newton that anybody's ever seen. I believe it when I see it, because a lot of times these guys are overhyped. It is what it is. Let's talk about three potential directions that you could go with this. One, is the suspension more PR than punishment? Probably. They want more to be able to coach against Oklahoma. You know, it feels like optics, like more than accountability. But the NCAA does sometimes take these things into account where, okay, he's missing the first conference game, so maybe that matters more. Does it confirm that Moore knew more than he claimed? Like, potentially, but I feel like if there was more in that text chain, it would be a bigger deal, and more stories would have gotten out. And then three, like, just as a, when you're looking in the rear view, is that championship from 2023, is that more tainted than maybe we initially assumed? And there's some people that it will always look tainted to them. But to me, like, it doesn't bother me in the slightest. So I don't think that Michigan did anything more than anybody else. Like, I think they stole signs, and I think it was fine. It is what it is. So I'm not, I really could not care less. But there are some people that will always look at it differently. So just a guess. So, all right, let's move on. Topic number 5 here. Notre Dame and Clemson have agreed to a 12-game, 12-season scheduling agreement. Outside of Notre Dame's agreement with the ACC. Now, these games will count with the ACC in the years that this is all still being negotiated. But it starts in 2027. It just so happens to be the same year that their scheduling agreement with USC expires. That's interesting, right? Like, if you look at it, USC and Notre Dame has always been a thing. But that was when USC's conference was not nearly as difficult as the one that they are currently. So, right now, the USC-Notre Dame rivalry only has games scheduled through 2026. That includes this year's matchup in South Bend on October 18th, and then you got a final slated game in LA on November 28th, 2026. There's no handshake, there's no agreement, there's no extension on that. And now Notre Dame has come out and made an agreement with Clemson that extends past Notre Dame's agreement with the ACC. So that is a That's a pretty big deal. This is interesting. Basically, you can look at this as Notre Dame does have their primetime opponent with Clemson that is going to continue on whether the ACC agreement does or not. So is this USC not wanting to extend? Is this Notre Dame not wanting to extend? Who even knows? USC and Notre Dame is college football's oldest intersectional rivalry. Since 1946, they've played every year except for the COVID hiccup in 2020. This is basically as blue blood as it gets, right? And really, like, USC's Big Ten move changed the schedule, changed the math on it. It was the only marquee, it was the marquee non-conference game on a pretty soft slate when USC was in the Pac-12. Some years USC would play Oregon. That wasn't a thing until really the past decade, maybe a little bit longer than that, but you get the point. But USC is now looking at Ohio State, Michigan, Penn State, Iowa, Nebraska, like all in the same year, potentially. There's a lot more tough games. And Adam Bradford said there are questions within USC circles about whether it's still beneficial to play Notre Dame every year. For USC's playoff hopes under the new 12, 14, or 16 team CFP formats, playing Notre Dame on top of that Big Ten meat grinder might not make the most sense. However, if the Big Ten is guaranteed four slots and the non-conference games don't necessarily matter, well, there you go. The issue for Notre Dame was that they couldn't just sit around and wait for the CFP to decide what they were going to do. Notre Dame can schedule that game and potentially schedule the USC that game by Clemson game. They could schedule the Clemson game, and they can still go back and schedule USC if things work out for the Big Ten and the SEC to get four teams in, right? And we'll talk about the playoff stuff here in just a little bit. But there is a world where this rivalry has bitten the dust, right? Another casualty of conference realignment. We've already lost Bedlam. We've lost, we lost Texas A&M forever. Pitt, West Virginia didn't happen for 11 years. USC Stanford is no longer happening because Stanford's in the ACC. USC is in the Big Ten. There's a lot of rivalry games that are not happening anymore because of, and we're talking like big time rivalry games that matter to certain regions. And that's the most important thing with college football. And I feel like people don't necessarily pay attention to it, at least not the people at the biggest levels of the sport. College football is a regional game. It always has been. It always will be. Yes, nationally, it has become a bigger deal. Regionally, that's what makes it that's what makes college football so enticing. That's why people in Alabama want to watch Ohio State, Michigan. That's why people in West Virginia want to be able to watch the Egg Bowl. You know, things like that. Because you understand that there is hatred. You understand that there are real stakes on these games, regardless of record. So, USC Notre Dame is a huge one that could go away. I think it won't, but we'll see. You know, in the meantime, cherish the last couple of years of this because who knows what could end up happening. But if we, and I think we will, I think we're going to keep this game because I think that we're going to, I think we're going to get some news about the playoff pretty soon. And so I think that if the Big Ten is guaranteed four slots into the playoff, the only thing that's going to matter is conference record. So you're non-conference, you can schedule bigger games, and it won't matter. But if you're USC and you're still worried about overall record and stuff like that, well, in that case, no, it would make no sense to play Notre Dame every year. If you've already got to play Ohio State, Michigan, Penn State, Oregon, etc., right? Like, it doesn't make any sense. So, or at the end of the day, I mean, it could just go on rotation. That's entirely possible. Topic number, I don't even know what topic we're on anymore. Six? Seven? I guess it's topic seven. I don't want to talk about it, but we have to. It's Bill Belichick. Like, let's talk about branding. Let's talk about the battle at UNC. Pablo Torres, or Torre, I don't know much about Pablo. I know he's a name. I know. But he reported that Jordan Hudson, Bill Belichick's 24-year-old girlfriend, was being banned from the North Carolina football facility by the school. The school issued a statement a few hours later that said, while Jordan Hudson is not an employee at the University of Carolina Athletics, she is welcome to the Carolina football facilities and will continue to manage all activities related to Coach Belichick's personal brand. So Pablo Torre, the way that this all came about, he dropped an episode claiming the Hudson was banned and had become a growing concern among folks that were close to Belichick's family. So then North Carolina comes back and says, no, she's good. We don't have a problem here. Torre stands by the report. Pete Thamel said that North Carolina had to bring in a dedicated PR person just to handle Belichick, in addition to the team's regular PR handle. Belichick should not be this big of a story. Like, this is a full-blown media operation here for a first-time college football coach. Because Belichick has a lot of history in the NFL, but he has not coached at this level. So, this is such a weird thing. And this all, you know, it was already kind of weird. But they did that CBS Sunday morning interview, and they were doing, it, like, the interview was about his book, and it was a part of a book tour. It was not supposed to be, like, some big thing about North Carolina, but obviously if you were the North Carolina football coach, there's going to be questions about that as well, etc. When he was asked about his relationship with Hudson and how they met, that was the question. She stepped in off camera and cut off the question. And then you get all these different stories, like HBO was going to do Hard Knocks from North Carolina this year, first time they had done a college football thing, and was not... HBO basically shut it down and said that Jordan Hudson was too much of a problem. She was too involved. They didn't want to deal with it, so they just shut it down. That seems like a lot. So the fact that North Carolina hired a $10 million head coach that has so much baggage and so much of a spotlight that there is no talk about the football team, there's no talk about the football program, seems a little weird. I don't know that this is, like, the worst thing in the world. Like, there's no such thing as bad publicity, no matter what people will tell you. Yeah, this looks weird, but if North Carolina comes out and starts winning, and they've got the schedule to do it this year, none of this is going to matter. Like, nobody's going to care about this. But from a PR standpoint, it does seem kind of weird. Right? Like, Belichick has not coached a game yet. It's May. The off-field distractions are certainly something, so you got to wonder what the players that are inside of the program are thinking about all this. I don't know. I think that Belichick is bigger than the program. That is certainly a problem. You know, I mean, who knows? Who knows? Jordan Hudson has the potential to be a branding asset for North Carolina, I think. Whether or not a public university should allow her to control the image of their football coach, that's another question. So I'm interested in this. Let me take that back. I'm interested to a certain point, but I don't necessarily care about it, because I think the most important thing is whether or not you're going to be able to win football games, and I think Bill Belichick's going to be able to win football game. Like, I think that's the most simple part of this. So we'll see what ends up coming about from that. But it is interesting. Nonetheless, it is very, very interesting. All right, let's close out with this. This is an easy one. This is an I told you so kind of thing. We moved to a 12-team college football playoff format, and that is going to change in 2026, or at least the way that that the revenue is divided, et cetera, is going to change in 2026, potentially the way that the seeding is done. We've had discussions about the proper way to seed the playoff. The way that you look at it, last year, I believe it was, Penn State finished number 4 in the overall CFP rankings, but they ended up with the number 6 seed because Boise State, who was number 9, got the 3 seed. Arizona State got the 4 seed. Clemson was number 12, even though they finished like number 18 in the rankings. I mean, the seeding was all kind of jacked up, right? And it made for an easier path. Like, Texas had to get to the Final Four. Texas had to play Clemson, who already had 3 losses on the season, and they had to play Arizona State, who, by all accounts, was not... It was a great game, but Texas should have been way better than Arizona State, let's be honest. Same thing with Penn State. Penn State had to play SMU at home, and then they played Boise State in the Fiesta Bowl, and then they had to play against Notre Dame in the Orange Bowl. I mean, it was... You know, there were easier paths. We'll say that. games that that higher conference teams with better rosters should be able to win fairly easily. The playoff format now is potentially changing up again. Ross Dellinger tweeted out there was a meeting in New York between the leaders of the CFP. I think that's the easiest way to say it. We can talk about what their official titles are and all that. And what has come out of that is that there is more momentum to move to a 16-team college football playoff. And I told y'all, if you have been listening for the last several years, once you move to 12, then they're going to move to 16. And we talked about it forever ago because the former AD at Ohio State said, you know, this was before we moved to 12. He said, you know, there's a lot of talk about 16. It was always going to be this, okay? It was always going to be this. Looking back, last spring, all 10 FBS leagues and Notre Dame signed off on a memorandum of understanding that gave sole control of the future CFP formats to the SEC and the Big Ten starting in 2026. Those two leagues want as many teams in the playoff as possible. But if they are going to take four each, for them to get more, you're going to have to guarantee the other conferences something. Now, obviously, the SEC and the Big Ten basically control it. But if you want to avoid litigation, you have to at least have something that is open up to everybody. So doing a 4-2-2-1 was not going to work. You can't have four for the Big Ten and the SEC, two for the ACC and the Big 12, one spot for Notre Dame, one spot for G5. Because then the Big Ten and the SEC can't get more. The Big 12 and the ACC can't get more than two. G5 would only get one. And in years where Notre Dame doesn't make it, that would leave only one wildcard spot. And the wildcard spot was basically set up for Notre Dame. That's a 14-team playoff. This thing was always going to go to 16. You have to have more slots available. So there will be no buys. And this is not officially confirmed or anything like that, but I think it will be. This is what we're looking at. So, no buys, all chaos. You get four auto bids to the SEC, four to the Big Ten, two each to the ACC and the Big 12, one for the highest ranked G5, and three at-large bids with Notre Dame guaranteed access if they are ranked in the top 14. Now, my guess is that will change if they are ranked in the top 16, because you want to give Notre Dame as much leeway as possible because they are a TV ratings monster. So, Jim Phillips, the ACC commissioner, he said that he's against the auto bids thing. He said if you wanted to be a true champion, it shouldn't be artificial. It shouldn't be an invitation. But this is the way that it was always going to be. Period. One unnamed exec said you're going to alienate part of the country, but all these other things hinge on this, right? The SEC going to 9 conference games, it hinges on this playoff. ESPN is going to have to send over more money. There's a potential SEC Big Ten scheduling alliance that's been floated, and that has to do with the playoff as well. There's a lot of things that come with this. Tony Petitti did say, if we get the postseason right, we can play stronger non-conference matchups because there won't be as many stakes on the non-conference matchups. If you're just looking for big brand versus big brand, then that's what we'll end up getting. You can have Ohio State versus Texas when there's no stakes on that game, because if you have play-ins for these conferences, then the non-conference won't matter. You could go 0-4 in your non-conference slate, or 0-3, I guess, if you move to a non-game conference schedule in the SEC. You could go 0-3 in the non-conference, and if you go undefeated in your conference, you're going to be number one, and you will have a higher spot. Now, it's not as likely that happens, but you get the point. So, everything is connected. Expand the playoff with built-in SEC and Big Ten slots. You justify adding a 9th conference game for the SEC. You lock in a scheduling partnership between the Big Ten and the SEC. You sell these new matchups for massive cash. You have the play-in tournaments. That's also going to be more money. It's a whole thing, right? The remade conference championship weekend, etc. But the 16 team is the one that's always going to make the most sense, right? Is it still a national playoff? Yes, because you will have teams from these other conferences. It's still going to be a lot of SEC and Big Ten teams, because those three auto bids, it's almost always going to be at least an SEC or Big Ten team. and probably two of those slots are going to be taken up by those. If the SEC has a really good year, like this past year, it would have been all SEC teams. In other years, it could be Big Ten teams. The question right now for the media side is ESPN getting a good deal? If they're letting the power leagues write the script, ESPN's desperation for big-time SEC-Big Ten matchups, it kind of opens the door for these conferences to run the sport entirely. But that was never really a question. They were always going to run the sport. The question here, could conference championships become meaningless? If seeding and access are predetermined, why even play a title game? I don't think it becomes meaningless. Because your top two seeds are always going to be in it, so they wouldn't necessarily have to play a conference championship game. The problem there is they're still going to want it because these media deals for the conference title games are so elusive. So, maybe elusive in the right word. They are very financially beneficial for these conferences. So they will still continue to have number one versus number two. I think more attention is going to be paid to number three versus number six and number four versus number five to see who actually gets into the playoff. So, I don't know. It's becoming very made for TV. The NFL went that direction. College football sold a long time ago. Why not continue down that path? I like this idea. You get more, I know this sounds ridiculous, you get more meaningful football games. And it's not that the other games were not meaningful, but when there's more stakes attached to it, you get more games like that. And if the players are going to be getting paid anyway, I don't feel as bad about them having to play more games. I think that's the easiest way to say it. I don't feel that bad about it. So, you know, this is going to be interesting. I'm excited about it. We'll see what ends up happening. All right, we're going to keep doing these. I'm excited. It was nice to get back in the fold and do some more college football talk. But Winning Cures Everything will continue on. I'm excited about this. We're going to try and get to a better schedule. Right now, it's a little everywhere. I'm going to release this on Monday morning on May 12th. But when it comes out, I will be on a plane to Phoenix. So the new job is interesting. And I'll give you guys more details on that as it goes. But just a lot going on in the world of college football. There always will be, always has been. I'm going to work on some conference previews and whatnot, and we'll figure it out as we go. So you guys are fantastic. Check out the website. Of course, check out bettingcfb.com. There's going to be some more updates over there as well. But winningcureseverything.com, make sure you are subscribed if you haven't already done that. Make sure that you are, of course, subscribed to, or not subscribed, but that you're following me on Twitter. At GaryWCE. You guys already know who we've got deals with. Ticketsmarter.com. Use WCE10 to get $10 off an order of $100 or more. Use WCE20 to get $20 off an order of $300 or more. And, of course, don't forget Ghost Sleeves. GhostSleeves.com/WCE. You get 15% off your order for the best kinesiology technology on the market, the best compression sleeves, etc. So go check them out as well. With that said, let's get out of this thing. You guys have been absolutely fantastic. I appreciate all of you. And with that said, take care of yourself. Take care of each other. God bless college football. And hopefully all of your tickets cash this week.
Thanks for listening to Winning Cures Everything. Make sure and follow me on Twitter, at GaryWCE. If you want to toss in a question, you can email me, Gary@winningcureseverything.com. Make sure and hit that subscribe button, and we'll see you next time.
Going up. Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Going to the gym can be discouraging, especially if you're putting in the work but barely seeing changes. But with Tonal, you can actually see your progress with every workout. Tonal provides the convenience of a full gym and the expertise of a personal trainer anytime at home with one sleek system. Designed to reduce your mental load, Tonal is the ultimate strength training system, helping you focus less on workout planning and more on getting results. No more second-guessing your technique. Tonal gives you real-time coaching cues to dial in your form and help you lift safely
safely and effectively. After a quick assessment, Tonal sets the optimal weight for every move and adjusts in 1-pound increments as you get stronger, so you're always challenged. Tonal lets you choose from a variety of expert-led workouts, from strength to aero hit to yoga and mobility to keep you coming back for more. For a limited time, go to Tonal.com to get $500 off your Tonal purchase, plus a free 4-year warranty. That's Tonal.com for $500 off, plus a free 4-year warranty. Tonal.com.